Welcome today to the Yoga Therapy Hour and to listening to the thought-provoking and heartbreaking discussion that I'm about to have with Ranju Roy. And he has a new book that he's just written called Yoga as Pilgrimage, Sutras for a Modern Age by Ranju Roy, R-O-W. And this discussion was not one that we planned. We had some questions that we decided not to go with, and we decided to just move into it and be together and see what happened. And I have to say that I was very heartbroken within the first few moments of this episode, to the point where it was hard to continue. And I also want to give you the option about if this is the episode that you want to listen to at this moment. I hope you will listen to it, but I always just like to give people the option of making sure that you have the support you need around you, whether that's Mother Nature or a friend you can talk to or a nap or your journal, something that can support and nourish you. Because the beginning of this conversation with Ranju is quite challenging, actually. And I didn't know what we were going to talk about today, so you'll hear me get a little bit choked up also. Now, as part of the discussion that Ranju and I were having, I said, Ranju, would you mind if I read an excerpt from your new book about our discussion? And so I'm going to do a little bit of that now. It's on page 26. The Journey of Incarnation and Dissolution. Ranju says, there are innumerable flowerings in each of our existences, our lives and action, and forms touch many other people in one way or another. We all ripple out, and as we approach the end of our lives, as the precisely tuned machinery begins to falter, what was once distinct and defined becomes less so until finally form dissolves and we return to a sort of unity. A single incarnation is a journey from the undifferentiated unity through to differentiation as we fully manifest our individual lives. It's increased specialization and individuation. But then at some point, there's a reversal back to the undifferentiated simplicity, and that is what we call death. Today, we are talking about pilgrimage, the pilgrimage of your life, the pilgrimage of your spiritual journey, the pilgrimage of being human and being born and living a life for sometimes a very short period and sometimes 100 years. And then going back to the ocean of whatever that is out there. We don't even know. We have some ideas, but we don't know what happens after. So I just want to move into this interview with a tender heart and love for Ranju and his family, and really recommend this book called Yoga as Pilgrimage, because I think the intimacy that is in this book of Ranju's heart, it is themes that all of us feel as human beings. This is what it means to be human. And oftentimes there is suffering as human beings. We know that. So thank you for being here today. And I look forward to you getting to be touched by Ranju in the way that I was today. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour, Season 7. Our goal with this podcast is to help you remember the goodness in life. Remember the goodness inside of you. Remember the goodness inside of everyone else. This world has been so challenging for many years now, and I think we need a reminder that it's going to be okay. We're going to be okay. We can trust ourselves to make it through this challenging life. And this podcast is your reminder. Each and every week, we have a special guest who's going to come here and remind you it's going to be okay. We got this together. Welcome, Ranju, to a second round of the Yoga Therapy Hour. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Good, excited to talk to you.
I'm so excited too. Tell our listeners again where you're coming from.
Literally, or metaphorically, literally, I'm coming from the southwest of England, Somerset, which is near the boot, that triangle bit down the southwest.
Those of you watching this, you're seeing him point.
Okay. Yeah, down in the left-hand corner of the UK. It's been really wet and cold, and today's kind of warm, and it was warm yesterday. So intimations of summer, which is lovely.
Yeah, same here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. All right, well, we are here today to talk about your lovely new book that has just come out, yes?
Yep, it came out on my mother's 84th birthday, March the 20th, certainly. Oh.
So it's called Yoga as Pilgrimage, Sutras, and that is Patanjali, Sutras for a Modern Age, but it's also your sutras, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I can say.
So now let's talk about metaphorically, where are you coming from since you mentioned it?
Okay, where am I coming from? I am coming from an emotionally charged time of late, and this book in some ways has been fairly central. So metaphorically, we could say I am coming from a fairly charged place emotionally. There has been a lot going on for me since shortly after this book came out, and I have been thinking about what yoga means, but more widely, what life means. I mean, should we just get straight deeply into this?
Yes.
I mean, this is quite heavy, but this is where I'm coming from. My daughter, just after this book came out, so maybe 6 weeks ago, my daughter gave birth to a baby who died. Well, she died within half an hour. So I was in the hospital with her, and I've talked to my daughter about, you know, about this and about talking to you about this today. So I'm just telling you where I'm coming from. And what happened was during that period, I stayed with my daughter in hospital for 48 hours. And we just had this kind of incredibly sort of shamanic experience of hardly any sleep with her. I mean, she's okay now, but at that time she was life and death, really. She was on a drip and she had to have a blood transfusion, all sorts of stuff. And during that time, I just talked to her this morning, and she told me this morning that after that had happened, after our 48 hours together in the hospital, I'd hardly got any sleep at all. I just was with her. And she said after that, she couldn't really read anything. Everything seemed either too triggering or too trite. And she said she read my book and she hadn't read it before. I mean, I talked to her about it and she read it, bits of it. And she said to me this morning that for her, it was a book about incarnation and dissolution. And that was absolutely the thing that she needed to read about and talk about and hear. You know, Yoga as Pilgrimage, Sutras for a Modern Age. You know, in some ways, this is, of course, a book about yoga because yoga is such a broad subject. You know, it's not a book about a particular pilgrimage, but it's a book about journey. And she was saying to me this morning that the way she read it was that it was this book about incarnation and dissolution, and the yoga was my conduit. It was the conduit for discussing really what it means to be a human in incarnated form and what happens when we come into the world and what happens when we leave the world. So really, let's just say that's where I'm coming from and that's how it is at the moment. So it's been pretty charged.
Oh, Ranju, I'm heartsick. I can't imagine the hopes and the dreams and the expectations that you all had and having such a short time together.
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know what to, I mean.
I know, I feel like I'm tearing up now. So I think it's good to just pause and let this be what it is. I didn't know this going in. And
No, I know. And I'm sorry to spring that on you.
No, I'm glad you shared it with me. And, you know, I have a student also that has lost a child. And I think of her a lot. I think of her as a person who's practicing the teachings of yoga and Patanjali's Yoga Sutra and what happens at that last breath and what we know and what we don't know.
Oof. It's So, Amy, we've really been on a journey. We've really been on a big journey. I mean, Polly, my daughter, she lives maybe an hour away from here, and I've been in touch with her a lot over the last 6 weeks. That's where we're at. And I've been thinking about this interview, and I've been thinking about, I gave a talk on this book as well. And one of the images that came to me yesterday about yoga and about what we do, and I was thinking about my early involvement in yoga, etc., is that often I think that yoga, like so many other things, like alcohol or drugs or sex or whatever it is a way of either, it can be a way of building an exoskeleton of protection against life's, what we're not expecting. I mean, I think that's what I did. I think that's what yoga was for me. When I was in my 20s, I didn't know what I was doing. Life was difficult. I'm not actually against building an exoskeleton either. I mean, you know, sometimes we need protection. The issue is that when the exoskeleton becomes such a suit of armor that we fall apart without it. And for me, working on this idea of yoga is much more about building an internal support rather than an external support. Yeah, that's the image that's come up for me.
How do you differentiate the exoskeleton from the internal support?
That's a really good question, because I haven't thought about it apart from having an image. You know, it came to me as an image yesterday. Just in talking to you now, that I'm just thinking one of the ways that I think you differentiate is that somebody with an exoskeleton can be hard. Hard and also perhaps a little brittle in certain ways.
Yes.
So I think there's a softness which comes with having an internal structure. The concept of calcification around ideology. So when you become very dogmatic and hardened and calcified around certain ideas, I think dogmatic, it seems to me that this is indicative of an exoskeleton, where somebody's clinging so strongly to a particular ideology that they become very emotional or upset if it becomes too challenged.
Yeah. What I'm discovering on this yoga journey is I let go of my rigidity and dogmatic thoughts about how deskachar yoga needs to be passed on. I'm realizing that my yoga is helping me live with a broken heart, and that sometimes I want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's too hard to practice our yoga with a broken heart and just stay in it and keep doing it. I want to go back to numbing. I want to go back to the exoskeleton. I don't want to feel this broken heart. And frankly, sometimes consider leaving yoga because it's too hard to live with a broken heart and practice your yoga.
It's a real fine line that can be real challenges. Anybody who's had a child just after the birth, you're in that kind of almost ecstatic, you know, just altered reality state. And I think the same after a death. I haven't actually experienced the death of either of my parents, or friends of mine have died, but I haven't been with anybody. I was with the baby who we called Jyoti just after she died. You go into a kind of a different reality, don't you? You go into a different place. And I think everything is stripped away.
Yeah.
I don't know what to be there.
I feel very protective of you right now. Like, I don't want you to talk about more than you're wanting to talk about. So I want to give you permission to just say no thank you, or let's move on. You know, I want to be very sensitive in this conversation. And yet I'm very curious, what did that alternate place feel like to you, or that after you realized what had happened and everything got stripped away, what did that feel like?
It felt fizzing with so many emotions. The first night when I was with her in the hospital, we were in this kind of 21st century modern hospital, which was humming and air conditioned, and you didn't know whether it was 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and various professionals would come in and then they would leave, and it was kind of like a space capsule. And I went through this book. I mean, I told her all about this book, and I read things from other books, and I just talked and talked and talked. And I told jokes, and, you know, sometimes we were both creased up with laughter. We were crying, we were laughing, we were telling all sorts of things. It was like a kaleidoscope, and it was also like a dream, which I can barely, I mean, it's like 6 weeks ago now, but it's also kind of like trying to remember what it was like being in that sleep, and I was majorly sleep deprived. So what was it like? It was like altered reality, whereby the rules of normal life were suddenly taken away, and a lot of stuff didn't matter. And what did matter did matter.
I've often thought that around times of death or serious illness, like all these things that we prop up that matter and that we need to do X, Y, Z to prepare for the future. And it's just exhausting. And it honestly doesn't matter. I'm not saying we shouldn't try to have a retirement or, you know, there are some things we try to function, but in the most important moments of life, none of it matters. None of that stuff matters.
And simultaneously, the most trivial thing, it even sounds a little blasphemous or irreverent, but you know, there were some very funny, jokey things, and it's kind of like, oh, are we allowed to do this? There were times when I was laughing about funny, ridiculous things. Mm-hmm. We were both laughing. So it's kind of like, it wasn't just tragic somberness. It was just everything. Do you know what I mean? It was everything.
Kaleidoscope is such a beautiful image.
It was a kaleidoscope. It was a kaleidoscope. I wrote a little section in this book called The Journey of Incarnation and Dissolution. And I wrote that probably 2.5 years ago, because obviously the book evolved over time. It's in the first section, and it just felt very prescient or very pertinent at that time.
Ranju, would you mind if, when we're finished, I read that portion to our listeners as the intro?
Of course, of course.
As we talk about this book, I honestly, when I first started reading it, I didn't 100% get it. I was starting to read it, and in my mind, in the Deskachar teaching and tradition, I see a pilgrimage as a place you go, either physically or mentally, emotionally or spiritually, or a connection that you make, that you travel out. The journey is probably going to be challenging. You're going to have things revealed to yourself that you didn't know prior. Some of those will be very painful. Others will be joyful. You will visit this unknown land within yourself, or maybe a true unknown land. And then you will bring a piece of that back to your original location, inside and outside. And now you will be a different person. Is that how you see pilgrimage, or could you expand on that?
Yeah, I think that's how we can see pilgrimage. I think that's a very valid way of thinking about pilgrimage. I mean, I was thinking of a sort of a circularity to any journey where you go somewhere and you come back. And of course, by the time you come back, you're not in the same place. When you come back to your starting point, you're not in the same place. But that circularity seems to me to be the underlying pattern of everything. So not only does the earth circle around the sun, we have the earth circles on its axis, the moon circles around the earth, we have all the seasons, we have the patterns of day and night, we have the lunar months. Every single day seems to me to be an equivalent of the beginnings of a pilgrimage, in as much as you come into something, you then journey, and then that you come back to a place. Basically, you come back to sleep. You come up from sleep and you go back to sleep. So every day is a journey, is a pilgrimage. You can metaphorically see every day is a pilgrimage. Every month is a pilgrimage. Every year is a pilgrimage. We have kind of rituals around looking back at the year, for example, beginning of the year or at the end of the year. And even at a more macro level, every life is a pilgrimage, because we are born into the world and we open to the world, and then we die from the world and we exhale. I hope it doesn't sound too labored, but I also think even every breath is a pilgrimage, because every inhalation is an opening to the world, and every exhalation is a return to ourself. It's a little bit paradoxical, because you might think as we inhale, the air comes in, but actually, in order for the air to come in, we have to open.
Yes.
So it's the act of opening which allows the world to enter.
Right.
The act of withdrawing, which forces the air out. It's not quite.
I get it. I often get that question. Well, wouldn't it be the opposite? But I agree with you. It's that when we exhale and we're empty, That's when we are with ourselves.
Exactly. And one of the ways I think about it is that the inhalation and the exhalation are the equivalent of spring and autumn. Mm. And in spring and autumn or fall, that's when the movement happens. Just like with the breath, the inhalation, that's when there's movement. Exhalation, that's when there's movement. The summer and the winter, there's a kind of a stillness potentially, you know, a very still summer day or a very still winter day. They are like the kumbhaka. They're like the pauses after the inhale and after the exhale. And the pause after the exhalation seems to me to be like deepest still winter, when everything has gone back to its essence. The trees are just back to their skeletal forms. You know, it's before they're coming in. The earth is pregnant with potential, but it hasn't yet started coming. And just like the inhalation is there, ready to come. So the idea of pilgrimage, for me, I've thought about it in terms of both every single breath we take, every day we live, every month, every year, and every life.
Hello to all of our listeners. We would like to thank you for being listeners and offer something very special in the months of June, July, and August of 2024. We will be offering meditations where the community can come together online on Zoom for free. And we're going to offer meditations on the new moon and the full moon of every month. June, July, and August. We will also be offering yoga nidra for certain health conditions such as high blood pressure, and we'll be having a summer solstice celebration together on June 20th, 21st, something in there, on International Yoga Day, and we would love for you all to come and join us. So we'll put all of the information in the show notes. It's free, it's our gift to you, and it's a way that we can come together as a community and get to know each other better and enjoy a meditation or a yoga nidra. So we hope to see you there.
So when I first started reading, I was like, is he taking me on a pilgrimage?
Right.
Is this his pilgrimage? Like, I was trying to get my footing in the book.
Right.
As you took me closer to the destination, if you will, it got deeper and deeper, and I started to understand more about you and about me and about being human, until the final part on page 135, the reflections, I was like, we have arrived at the destination. And it was a beautiful journey. And I just thought that was so interesting that in the beginning, I didn't know where I was going. I wasn't sure, like, what is this? And then I just had the faith. I know you, Ranju, and I know the depth of your heart. And I know you have studied and embodied the teachings of yoga for decades. And I was willing to go wherever you were going to take me. And as it started going deeper and deeper, I felt like I was in your personal diary of really depth understanding of what yoga means and how it can help us have that internal skeleton.
Thank you for saying that. And I'd like to say a couple of things about structure and how that worked for me, because I wrote much of this book during lockdown. Embodying the Yoga Sutras, which I wrote with Dave, and which I'm really pleased with that book, we really set out to try to write a book about Patanjali's Yoga Sutras from the perspective of what we had been taught through the lineage of Desikachar. So, you know, really respecting our teachers. And we wanted to be as kind of accurate and as precise and as correct, if you like, as we could be. You know, we were really thorough. Dave Charlton, who I worked with. And this book was slightly different in as much as I wasn't being like a representative of any tradition, you know, formally. This was just like, this is where I'm at now. I'm writing just, this is what I think. This is where I've got to. And I'm not saying that this is the truth. I'm not even saying this is right, but this is where I'm at. This is where my understanding has got me. It's like when you have an abstract piece of philosophy, like the Yoga Sutra, for example, or an abstracted piece of philosophy, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't want to know about the author, because sometimes you think, oh, maybe you don't want to know about the author because you know, it could be a beautiful piece of writing, and then you find out the author's a terrible person. You think, oh, you know, there could be a conflict there. But in some senses, I really wanted to do two things. I wanted to write about almost like a didactic, some didactic things which came from where my understanding is. And I also wanted to write a little bit about who I am and where I am and why I'm saying these things. So there were two narrative voices for quite a lot of the thing. And I really struggled with how to stitch those two things together. And I thought, is this like autobiographical or is this a book about philosophy? And it was a lot of struggling going on in there. My sister really helped me. She's an editor and she really helped me massively to try and work this out.
And I just want to say that's the part of the book that I was like, where are we going? Is this similar to your first book? Yes. Is this autobiographical? Like, I was kind of page by page going back and forth, like, where is this pilgrimage headed?
Yeah. Okay. So exactly. So the book is really divided into three major sections. The first section is called Foundations. And in the Foundations, I have written my personal 23 sutras. I mean, of course, they're referenced as inspiration from Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, but basically this is my 23 sutras. I've created these sutras in English, and some may find that a bit cheeky of me to take a form or whatever. But anyway, it was just a nice way of distilling some points. And then I wrote a commentary about my 23 sutras. So that was my kind of starting point. And then I wrote a little bit about Sankhya and about Patanjali. And then the middle section is called The Journey, which is each of the chapters in The Journey is divided into two halves. And the first half is in italics. And it's the italics first half is just like me walking along with you as if we were walking in the hills. And I'm just chatting to you. I'm just telling you stuff about my teachers, about my life and about, you know, stuff. It's kind of autobiographical, but also I want to talk about the context of how I've got to where I've got to. And then the second half is not in italics, and it's slightly different. I think it's a different authorial voice, if you like. It's a different narrative voice. It's a different narrator. It's still me, but it's a different part of me. And I think that second half is more didactic, and I feel like I'm the mouthpiece of more of a teacher rather than a companion and a friend, if you like. And stitching those two halves together is one sutra from my modern day sutras. So I have taken eight of those sutras in the eight chapters. I've taken one per chapter and I've used it. And we know the word sutra means, you know, a stitch. So I've used one sutra to stitch the two halves of each of those middle chapters together.
The titles of those chapters, First Steps, the Yoga of Action, Being, Voice, Focusing, Seeing, Working with Form, Beyond Form. That's section two.
Right. That's the pilgrimage. And I can say something about that because I think it does reflect, it's a journey inwards, and it kind of has echoes of both the Sankhya philosophy and the eight limbs of yoga, but it's not exactly the same, but it kind of echoes. So First Steps, the first chapter in The Journey, is really about why would you undertake a journey? Why would you start this thing? Why would you do anything? And so it's really about what motivates us. And it's about suffering. I mean, I talk about, you know, suffering, dukkha, you know, so that's the kind of first steps. In the Yoga Sutras, Patanjali starts his chapter two, Sadhanapada, with Kriya Yoga, which is Kriya, we know, is action. So the yoga of action is Tapas, Swadhyaya, Ishvara, Pranidhana. I've translated that as tempering, listening, and trusting are the three kind of words that I've used. That's kind of like the foundational practice. That's the bottom line. We've got to temper. By tempering, I mean heating up and purifying, which is my loose translation of tapas. Swadhyaya, I've translated it as listening. Peter used to talk about taking support from within. It's like listening internally, hearing some wisdom within. And I particularly like this image, which I can't remember where I got it from. So I don't think it's original, but I can't remember it. It's one of those things kind of get mulched up in your head. But just the fact that listen is an anagram of silent, I love that. in order to listen, you have to be silent. And I think there's a quality of silence and listening in Swadhyaya. And then the whole image of trusting, you've just got to open to what happens. So that was the second chapter. And then from there, I kind of saw being, voice, focus, and seeing really is similar to the limbs of Patanjali's Ashtanga, because being was about yama. It's about how we are in the world. So there's a quality of that in there. Voice, you know, if being was about yama, I saw voice as very much about, also about yama and niyama to an extent, but also in the Sankhya model, the karma indriyas, how we act upon the world, our actions within the world. So in the Sankhya philosophy, they talk about having these five ways that we impact on the world. We have our voice, we have our hands, we have our feet, we have our sexual organs and our excretory organs. So these are the five ways that we make a mark on the world. And in that chapter on voice, I use voice as the lead organ of action, if you like. But I reference the other ones as well. So you've got that voice. Focusing, I see, is very much about dharana, about the ability to be with something and stay with something. So I talk about that whole process. And then seeing, as I think of a samadhi, the fruition of focusing. I talk about seeing similarities with art, with visual imagery, because I've also done some paintings for this book. And seeing and being a yoga teacher, I think, are very related, shall we say.
And I love that little section in there on observation.
Yeah.
Being able to observe your students and watch your students. That was a beautiful section.
Yeah. It's a meditation, isn't it? It really is a meditation to be able to be with and see beyond the skin and see the potential. So you've got the first steps, you've got the yoga of action, you've got being, which is like yama, you've got voice, which is about the karma and how we act, how we use our faculties. And then this focusing, which is more around mind, and seeing, which is almost like a fruition of focusing. And then working with form. For me, I had the image of climbing a mountain or climbing a hill or something, and then looking back and reviewing the journey. So in that working with form chapter, I feel like that's looking back and also talking about the fact that we have this particular body. This is how we're incarnated as humans. It was a kind of more of a review of the whole yoga journey, I think. And then beyond form was kind of looking to maybe intimations of enlightenment or liberation, but I don't want that to sound too mystical or pretentious, but something about how do we transcend or liberate ourselves from particular suffering, which is inherent with being glued to form. And I talk about possibly God, tentatively.
The potential of God.
Yeah.
So that whole section just spoke so deeply to me when I was reading it. That's where I felt like I was getting to look at your deepest heartfelt realizations and understanding after so many years of working with yoga. And yet it was the third part, the reflections, that you talk about living the path and not rushing through life. And, you know, what is progress? Why are we so competitive? Why do we need to compare ourselves to others? And ultimately, how can we relinquish our agendas? Like, that was the part that hit me hard. That was when I was like, oh, this is the destination. Like, maybe you thought the destination ended around beyond form, but for me, that final third section on reflections, that's really deep, touching material, was that I will take with me back to my original location.
I thought of that second section, the pilgrimage section, as the journey in. And the third one, reflections, is the journey on, the journey onwards. We've taken this journey inwards, which is great, but how are we going to manifest that? How are we going to live that? How are we going to engage with America, UK in 2024? There's a lot of shit going on. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on, and it can feel very, very overwhelming, and it can be very, very difficult. And it's exactly that, going back to the exoskeleton in the intro, you know, how do we remain soft and open, but with a result, with resources and an ability to continue to be here, because it's hard at times. The other thing I'd like to say, a lot of this book is me writing to me. I'm really honored to share it. I'm really pleased to share it. But it was me writing for me to try and understand where I am. And it was really important for me in writing this to feel free of any, like, this is right or this is wrong.
Yeah.
To feel free of any other authority apart from myself. To be an author means you have to assume authority. And I struggled with that. Like, who am I to say this stuff? That voice is definitely there. What happens if Jessica Child would disagree with this? Well, you know, I don't know whether he would or not.
I just want to jump in here because I think this is what Descachar was trying to get us to do. I don't think he was into the dogma. He wasn't into the image, the labels. He wanted each one of us to write this book to ourselves.
I totally agree with you. But what happened if he didn't?
Let it go.
I mean, I was quite anxious because this is a very personal book. And, you know, I was definitely anxious about how people, how my peers and my teacher, how other people might, you know, who the hell is this person to write? You know, those sorts of questions. There was an anxiety, and there was an anxiety within me about being an authority. I can be an authority by saying Patanjali said this or Descachar said this, and this is how I understand. But actually saying, okay, I'm saying this. It's a fine line between being, I mean, I'm not presenting myself as a guru or anything like that, but I am trying to be authentic in what I'm saying.
And all you're really saying is, this is what I've come to understand at this moment in my life, which will surely change. Yeah. And I would love to share that with you.
That's exactly it. That's what I'm doing.
And I, for one, there were so many common themes to the deep inner thoughts that I've had. And it was very affirming. It was very validating that being human, as you said at the end of the book, we're all unique. We all come in a unique package and offer something unique. But there's a lot of similarities to being human. And while I learned about you and being the twin brother of an English mother and an Indian father and Descachar, I was horrified that he had a nickname for you in the book. That, I don't know, if I feel he called you 50-50. Like, what in the world? Right?
But I'll tell you, it was done with so much affection. It was affectionate. And so I think any nickname is, you have to see it in the context of a particular relationship. I mean, it was funny. And he was fond of me. I know he was very fond of me.
Exactly. And that makes a difference. In today's context of cancel culture, he would be canceled for that. But
he would, and he shouldn't be, because it was a completely warm and loving.
I think he might have been saying, I see you. I see that it might be difficult to not be fully in either world. When I read it, I was horrified. And I was also like, he was saying, I see you, Ranju.
Yeah.
Well, you have taken me on a pilgrimage, and I intend to keep this book near my bedside table to read little parts of it as I drift off each night, again, second and third time. And I'm just wondering, you know, having this book released in March, and is there anything about the experiences you've had in the last couple of months that you'd like to share with us that either tie into the book or go beyond the book?
I did my first kind of official talk on the book just 2 days ago. So I made a little PowerPoint presentation with my sister's help, which was great. So one of the things that I've been thinking about in having created this book is, what's the difference between art and poetry and kind of like a spiritual or a religious book? You know, the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Quran, the Bible, all these great revered texts, which from a very traditional point of view would be seen as divinely inspired. I mean, are they just man-made poetry? I mean, you know, the person or people who made these beautiful creations may well have been channeling stuff, but it's kind of like in poetic form. So I've been thinking about, well, I tried to write kind of quite a poetic way in parts so that it was kind of evocative. There was metaphor, there were stories, and there were kind of ambiguities which allowed a reader to kind of bounce off into their own experiences. So I was thinking about the difference between like an instruction manual, which isn't poetic, right? So an instruction manual just says, first thing, do this. Next thing, do that. Then when you've done that, you can do this. You can't read that at any level apart from one level on which it's intended. What I was trying to do with this book, which is maybe a little more poetic, is to invite an interaction with the text, which allows for you to go on a bit of a journey. And as you said, I'd be delighted if people kind of just read little bits of it, because I've read bits back to myself and think, oh, that's quite good, actually. You know, who is this author? That's quite good. I'd like to read that.
That's what he's talking about from my
Wow. I mean,
but I felt that way too, Ranju. Just so you know, there are universal themes in your personal experience. And yeah. I think that's what a book should be. What else could we write except for our personal experience? And I'll go back to your first book that you and Dave wrote. I would go as far to say that that is your personal experience of the teachings of Deskachar. Even in wanting to stay true and clear, we can only hear and perceive and take in what this vessel allows us to. So I've kind of let go of this idea of we have to do it perfect and we have to try to repeat everything that we were taught in a particular way. Deskachar didn't even do that from 1970 to 2010. Like,
it changed a lot.
Exactly.
That is breathing life into a tradition, isn't it? Otherwise, the tradition becomes a museum artifact, which is fossilized in 1985 or whatever it is. And then it becomes an heirloom, which is handed down with this kind of precious heirloom, which we can't touch. You know, it doesn't change and it will go out of date. You have to breathe life into traditions.
It's sad, but it's behind the glass. Mm. It doesn't have prana.
Exactly. It doesn't have prana. So I feel that this is what I wanted to do. And I think you're right. I hope we try it. Dave and I did that in embodying the Yoga Sutras as well. It was breathing life into how we've understood the teachings of Deskachar. This was a little more personal because it wasn't specifically about the Yoga Sutras, although the Yoga Sutras, of course, was hugely influential in what I wrote about.
Mm. Well, thank you for having the courage to share the intimate feelings, sensations, thoughts of your heart. I mean, I would be scared to death to do that, honestly. Yeah. I'm kind of in shock that you were brave enough to do that.
Well,
thank you. I've left you speechless.
You're very welcome. In terms of how we started the interview, I just wanted to say, I just talked to my daughter this morning and I said, look, if this comes up, you know, how do you feel about me saying anything? And she just said, look, please do, because so many people are carrying wounds and are carrying things which they're not able to talk about. And she said, it's really important to be able to say the unsayable and to share.
I'm not sure if this is appropriate to say, but when you first expressed what had happened, I had so much sadness for your daughter and the baby and for you. And I also felt a universal sadness for the children in Gaza and Rafah and,
absolutely,
you know, oh, this being human, it is heartbreaking.
That I've been thinking about, exactly the thing that you said was, you know, as human beings, there are two words, Vishesha and Samanya. Samanya means how are we the same? What's similar in us as human beings? And Vishesha, what's specific to you, Amy? How are you, Amy? Why are you, Amy? And why am I around you? And there's something very specific and there's something very different as well. And I think here are the three things that all humans, whether it's like, you know, Jyoti's very, very brief little life or Krishnamacharya's 100 years life, the same deal is that we incarnate, however long or short, we incarnate, we die, and we experience loss. And I think how we experience loss and how we deal with that, how we deal with change, I mean, that is the message of the Buddha. That is the message of Patanjali. Do we harden and calcify and create this exoskeleton which really leaves us stuck? Or do we open to that change and has the potential to flower into a loving, compassionate being. That's the journey. And yoga has lots of tools which can help us on that. And I think that's what this book's about.
Well, thank you, Ranju. And from where I'm sitting, I think you have succeeded as a human in opening to that, being that loving, compassionate being. I think the yoga has worked on you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Ranju, for being with us today and being so present and really letting us have a peek into exactly how you're feeling today in this moment and the challenges and the joys that come with your human incarnation, Ranju. I want to read probably my favorite part of the book on page 149 called Relinquishing. Ranju writes, "As I grow older, I realize I can't do some of the things I could do a few years ago. It's a cliche, I know, but 40 years ago really doesn't seem that far away. And the chances are I won't be around for another 40 years' time. 10, 20, 50, or 100 years, in the grand scheme of things, we are not that different from mayflies. It is only our human perspective which thinks that a century is a long time, or a day is short. As we grow older, of course, we change. The arc of our lives moves from growth and expansion and possibility through to a greater limitation and turning inwards. If the limitations are welcomed graciously and the turning inward is practiced skillfully, it can be joy, or at least bearable. A relinquishment of the external pressures to prove oneself. But if not, it can also lead to depression, a sense of failure and bitterness. Grumpy oldies complaining about the youth of today. One of the greatest challenges of life is dealing with loss. The faculties, power, youth, family, friends, and lovers. How can we most elegantly navigate these losses to allow for new possibilities to arise out of the ashes? So with that, I leave you for today and I send you a warm embrace and a soft heart and the realization that we are all human and we are all suffering, and hopefully we can be here for one another. So thank you for listening today. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We hope that you enjoyed this content. Much of what we talk about goes right into the other work that I do. One of the really exciting things coming up soon is a program that I'm running with Mala Cunningham called Mental Health, Neuroscience, and Yoga, a peer counseling certification training. There'll be two parts. One of the parts will be online, and the second part will be in person. And at the end of this program, you will be a certified peer counselor who knows how to be in relationship with respect to mental health, neuroscience, and yoga. It's a two-weekend program, and we can't wait to invite you to learn more about it. If you're interested, go ahead and email welcome@theoptimalstate.com. Again, welcome@theoptimalstate.com, and Mala and I will get back to you to let you know the dates and locations of the program. All right, I hope you'll join us. Let's talk soon. A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.